Hawaii is
Interview
going to
with
kill them anyway.
Judge Frank Johnson.
If there's any person in Alabama
July
that's been
10th,
out of politics
1974.
For the last 21 but that's a long jump from Southern politics to social change effected through formal litigation.
Now, we're interested in all political and social economic changes in that 25-year period that you can't separate.
Now, what we're interested in is the forces of change as well as the politics in the narrow sense.
Then maybe you are at the right place.
How do you perceive the role of the federal judiciary in the South as a force for change?
Well, I don't think there's any question but that the federal judiciary has, for the past 20 years, since I've been here 19 years, been cast in a role of deciding issues, legal issues, the effect of which created vast social changes. Your voting, your school desegregation, the desegregation of all public facilities, from buses to airports. But you need to emphasize this and or keep this in mind in making your analysis that the action of the judges sitting on the federal bench hasn't been for the purpose of effecting social change. That's been a result of it, and there's no question about that. Some people argue that it's good, and some people argue that it's bad. But a judge can't be concerned with whether it's good or whether it's bad, as long as he's presented with the legal issues and decides those issues. And many of these cases, he decides them with knowledge that it's going to affect pretty far-reaching mores that have been established, other features of Southern society that's existed for a long time. That's not peculiar to the South. That's true in Boston. When Judge Murphy decides a case, a school desegregation case in Boston, it affects social change. The change has probably been more pronounced here because the rate of desegregation has been faster. Excuse me. Function of the court. That's been a result of decisions that the court has rendered. And it has not been a function of the court to change social patterns or change society. The change in the social patterns has come about through the implementation of the orders. But when you when you have a voting rights case and you find that there's been a pattern in practice of discrimination against the blacks in registering to vote, you don't register the blacks to vote so that they can gain political power in Macon County or Lowndes or Sumter or Perry. You are faced with some legal issues, and if they're entitled to relief, you give them relief and you order that they be registered. Now, the effect of their registering and voting and electing a sheriff and other county officials is something that the court's not concerned with and has no interest in. And when I say the court, I'm talking about myself. Makes no difference to me as a federal judge in deciding case whether you have a black sheriff or a white sheriff in Macon County. I use that as an example. It does make a difference to me as a federal judge when a case is properly presented as to whether the blacks who are legally entitled to vote are given the right of franchise. So I approach the thing strictly from a legal standpoint. Minors is restricted to the lawsuit that's presented, and I have no interest in the social change as a judge. True with school segregation. True in as far as the right to sit on juries. I have no interest as a federal judge in whether you have juries that that render high verdicts to people in a low economic group, or whether you have a blue ribbon jury that renders low verdicts in a civil suit for damages. But when the case is presented, I do have an interest in whether there's been discrimination in the selection of jurors in a constitutional sense. So the role that federal judges have played in social change in the South, maybe I shouldn't say federal judges. I'll restrict it to my own role. Has been one of effecting resultantly a social change, and there's no question about it. But that wasn't the motive, and it wasn't the purpose, and it wasn't the intent.
That the relief came not from legislative acts or executive acts, but judicial.
In most instances, that's absolutely true. It is true, and the courts have, by reason of the decrees, effected a social change.
You see this continuing?
Probably not at the pace that it has. There are some areas that appear to be opening up for litigation on constitutional questions haven't been vigorously pursued to this point, but not as many as they were. I would guess housing, equal employment, are two of the ones that I have in mind. We haven't had litigation in those two areas that I expect we will have.
Yeah.
And that will, in all probability, affect some social change. But that won't be the reason for the decision that the judge renders. He'll be enforcing Title VII in the Equal Employment Opportunity Act. He won't be doing it so that Boston Manufacturing Company desegregates their workforce for social reasons. He has no interest in that, or he shouldn't have.
You've been on the bench 19 years, which covers most of the period.
Covers all of it.
Certainly covers most of the period. So we're talking about, we're sort of covering the last 25, so it covers all the period of major social change and almost all the period.
Sure, nothing happened after Brown for several years.
How much of the major impact, in your opinion, it came insofar as the effect of judicial decisions was based on Supreme Court rulings that in effect broke new ground, such as Brown, and how much came from actually implementation of congressional acts, such as the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and other legislation?
Well, a lot of it came from Brown. For instance, in the Montgomery bus case, Brown didn't discuss, Supreme Court in Brown didn't discuss Plessy v. Ferguson. Plessy v. Ferguson was still on the books and was a viable decision on the face of it in the area of public transportation. Until we decided in the Montgomery case that Brown had evidenced a doctrinal trend as far as the Supreme Court's feeling was concerned and segregation in any public facilities. That's an example of a portion of the litigation that came from Brown, but a lot of it came from statutes such as the Civil Rights Act of 1965. A lot of it came from the revival of old statutes that had been on the books since the 1860s. 1983, for example. One of the courts used the expression that Lazarus has been revived after sleeping 100 years. And, some of it came...
That statute does what?
Well, it...
is that the one with interfering?
It allows civil action for damages for deprivation of civil rights. It's a broad statute. It hasn't been used until the last 5 or 6 years. But a large part of the basis for the decisions that's been rendered in the areas in which you are interested, those that had the effect of promoting a social change, were based strictly upon the 14th Amendment, denial of equal protection and denial of due process. Without any regard to Brown, or without any regard to statute. So, it's been a mixture, some of all of it. Some of it's statutory, some of it comes through the implementation of Brown, some of it comes through an interpretation of the 14th Amendment. For instance, the injunction I issued against the state of Alabama personnel board, the Frazier case, the injunction I issued against the state troopers, those came neither from Brown nor statutes, came on denial of equal protection by the state and discrimination in their hiring practices.
The reapportionment decisions, and particularly the one that came out of Alabama, the one man, one vote case,
It
certainly had far-reaching impact nationally and especially in the southern states.
Well, now, in some of these cases, I don't mean to interrupt you for the purpose of breaking your train, but in a lot of these cases, like the reapportionment case, those were three-judge cases.
Right.
I didn't handle those cases long. Judge Reeves sat with me, or I sat with him on nearly all these panels. This is one of them. Your reapportionment case denial of the right of franchise. It's based on constitutional principles without regard to statutes or without regard to Brown. And I guess it has had far-reaching effect. But getting back to your original question, we didn't decide the reapportionment case and order the state of Alabama reapportioned to put blacks in the legislature. That wasn't the purpose of it at all. We had no interest in whether blacks got elected. We did have an interest in equalizing the legislative districts because the Constitution mandates it.
Yeah, but other courts have said that's a legislative function. We're not going to touch that.
Well, they haven't said that since Reynolds v. Sims. The Supreme Court itself said that before Reynolds v. Sims. In your Colgrove case, for instance, which Gold Million that came from this district had to do with the Tuskegee boundaries, the gerrymandering. I sustained a motion to dismiss that case on the basis of Cosgrove, which was identical in point as far as facts and the legal principles and everything else. I said this is not a matter that the courts have any interest in. We have no jurisdiction over. Frankfurter had written in Cosgrove, it's a political thicket that we're not going to get involved in. I sustained a motion to dismiss it. It went to the Supreme Courts. Fifth Circuit affirmed me on it. Says Cosgrove is the law in this area. It went on to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says no in the Gomillion case. That if the motive is to discriminate on the basis of race, then plaintiffs have standing. And they remanded it to this court for that determination. Of course, there wasn't any question but that the motive was to disenfranchise blacks and so far as the municipality of Tuskegee was concerned, and I so found and held. But that was the forerunner of your reapportionment case. It had the effect of saying there's no political thicket in which the federal courts shouldn't get involved in if race and it was extended by the Supreme Court without saying so specifically in your Reynolds Sims case. So it put district courts in areas in which they had never been before. But I don't know of any courts that have said since Reynolds v. Sims that reapportionment's not an area that we're not going to get involved in. There may have been some, but it wouldn't last long on an appellate review.
How do you find the average person in Alabama's perceptions of the courts through the last 20 years? Have they changed?
Perception?
Yeah. Because 20 years ago, to get that kind of relief would have been unthinkable to go to a court. But now it seems to me commonplace.
Whites and blacks have become sensitive to the role that the federal courts have played and will continue to play insofar as individual rights and human rights are concerned. In the main, it's my impression that they appreciate it and they rest with some feeling of confidence, security, that there is a forum that will protect our rights. Without regard to politics and without regard to who's involved in it. Of course, there are others that have said that federal courts have become involved in matters that should be left strictly to the states. That reapportionment, for instance, is a state matter, and federal courts don't have any business messing with it. And the debate that goes between those that advocate intervention by federal courts and those that advocate abstention, the answer to that has been that the courts have given the state a reasonable opportunity to correct these constitutional wrongs, and they failed to do so. So I think that by and large, there's a feeling of confidence and appreciation and in this branch of their government, whether it be blacks or whether it be whites.
You find an increasing number of cases that deal with these problems in the last 20 years. In other words, if I wanted to get redress on apportionment, I would not go to the state legislature because they have a history since 1901 of not reapportioning. I would go to the courts. Sure. Do you find more of those kinds of cases?
These are not individual cases. These are not lawsuits that are brought by individuals. These are lawsuits that are brought by class, and they have statewide application. So when you litigate a case like the Alabama reapportionment case, you litigated it statewide. And you don't get individual lawsuits. We are getting some individual lawsuits that have come about by reason of our reapportionment decision. We have one set for next Monday. It has to do with whether a candidate that was disqualified is not living in the proper district, in fact, did live in it. Well, it's kind of a pendant jurisdiction matter. We've taken jurisdiction in the lawsuit because it involves an interpretation of our reapportionment decree. And the court that issued the decree should do the interpreting of the decree. So that's how we get these pendant type cases. But you don't get individual lawsuits, say, you get class actions prosecuted by named plaintiffs. For instance, a lawsuit attacking the state statutes that set up the Alabama Justice of the Peace system that provided that Justice of the Peace gets paid if he convicts and didn't get paid if he acquitted. That lawsuit had a statewide application, even though it was just brought by a fellow that got arrested for not having a tail light against a Justice of the Peace in Lowndes County, Alabama. And then you have another example. Named plaintiffs, maybe a half a dozen of them, that challenged the Alabama civil commitment to mental institution statutes. That case is pending now on the ground that there's no procedural and substantive due process rights. They don't get any notice that they're about to be committed. They don't have an opportunity for a hearing. They don't have an opportunity to hire a lawyer and no right to be represented by counsel. Some member of the family will go down and file a doctor's certificate and file an application with a probate judge, and next thing you know, the sheriff's knocking on the door, says, "I'm going to take you to Bryce mental institution." But those cases are prosecuted for the purpose of challenging the constitutionality of the statutes, and they're class actions and have statewide application. So you don't get an individual case.
No, what I meant is there an increase in that sort of class action suit dealing with human rights?
Well, there's been an increase in class action suits for the last 15 years.
That's what I meant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Typically, the answer was you have to go to the legislature to get that relief. If you want to change the statute, or if you want to change the Constitution, you go to the constitutional amendment route.
Well, my predecessor stayed here 23 years, and I doubt if he ever had a half a dozen human rights or civil rights cases. Well, I know he didn't.
That's what I was asking.
In class action.
Sure.
But this is true all over the country. You're getting class action cases. It's not only true in the human rights and civil rights areas. It's true in Security Act violations. You litigation in class actions and stock frauds and other Antitrust Act cases and Security Act cases. It's flourishing all over the country. It's class action. That area is still, that type of litigation still has some areas that needs a definition. Supreme Court just handed down one the other day on class actions that may be designed to restrict the use of class actions. Has to do with who's going to pay the cost of notifying. But it's hard to put some cases in a category of being a case to vindicate civil rights or human rights and a case to vindicate property rights. Some of them are hard to classify.
How has the changing role of the federal judiciary affected the state court system in this state?
Very few, if any, of these cases that we've been talking about, your civil rights or your human rights cases, have been litigated in the state courts. Going back to your Montgomery bus case in 1956, I guess, there was a lawsuit filed in the Circuit Court of Montgomery County that challenged the state statutes subsequent to the time the case had been filed in this court. And there's nothing wrong with these things being litigated in both courts. But the day we had our hearing on the constitutionality of segregation and public transportation system, Judge Jones, who was a circuit court judge here, ruled that the ordinances were constitutional. Of course, that wasn't binding on us. We had to view them. We had jurisdiction. We did. We ruled that they were not. They failed. I mentioned that as being a possible explanation as to why there hadn't been more of these cases filed in state courts. A lot of these cases have political repercussions. There's no question about that. We would be naive to the point of being imbecilic if we didn't realize that the decision in a lot of these areas have social and political repercussions. State judges have to run. They have to get elected every 4 years. I appreciate the sensitive and the insecure position that they find themselves in. But I suppose that was one of the reasons, if not the main reason, federal judges were given tenure. So they could decide cases according to the facts and the applicable law without regard to whether it was a popular or unpopular thing to do.
Well, many of your decisions, of course, have been unpopular with many of the people of Alabama. And you, as well as a number of other federal judges in throughout the South, in implementing orders that result in extensive social change, have come under considerable amount of community pressures and even physical threats of violence and so forth. How does this make you feel when you're facing a tough decision?
It doesn't bother me as far as the decision is concerned. You can't let it bother you as far as the decision. When you get to the point that you can't decide a case like it should be decided, it's time you started doing something. You have to live with your conscience. You have your professional pride. And those things are important to me.
What shaped your attitude both toward race and race relations as well as...
The law?
How about when you were growing up?
Never occurred to me. I grew up in northwest Alabama in the hills in the country. We didn't have many black people. Therefore, I didn't come out of there with any basic prejudices that you might if you grew up in the black belt. People in that section of the country didn't have blacks as servants. We didn't have any blacks to till the soil. The man that owned his farm farmed it. And
it was a history.
So I didn't have any ingrained racial prejudices that I had to cope with. Now some judges did have, and I would suspect that made it harder for them personally to apply legal principles in the case.
Okay.
But that was one of the problems I did not have.
Well, by Alabama standards, the peculiar nature of the history of the county in which you grew up, did that have any effect creating a feeling, an opposite feeling from the prevailing view, a feeling of antipathy toward racial prejudice?
No, I've always been, until I I got on the bench. This race thing wasn't a red hot issue. I went to the University of Alabama. I went to the University of Alabama Law School. I've never lived anywhere else. I've always been proud to be in Alabama. Still am. I haven't reached the point yet I've gotten nostalgic about it, like Justice Black, and I won't talk about it all the time, but I may someday. I don't know.
But given Alabama's political history, in which you had people like Hugo Black come out of Alabama, a lot of members of Congress who came out of Alabama who were became national leaders in developing...
Became statesmen.
And they became national leaders in developing social programs.
Right.
What sort of future do you see?
For myself?
No, not for yourself, but for the state of Alabama, politically.
Well, let's ask them both questions.
I don't know. That question involves George Wallace at the present time and his political future. And I wouldn't hazard a guess. All I know is what I read in the papers. I don't mean to be facetious about that, or to quote Jim Folsom, but I read an article this morning in the morning paper on George Wallace. I don't know what
Did you agree with that,
political futures are. I'm not going to talk about Governor Wallace. I never have. I had a motion one time that he filed asking me to recuse myself in a lawsuit because of what he had said about me, but there's never been any basis for a motion about what I've said about him. I've decided a lot of cases in favor of Governor Wallace in the last 19 years, when he's right.
Thinking back 19 years, could you have foreseen the social changes that occurred in this state?
No.
Why not?
Well, you'd have to be a prophet or a son of a prophet to have foreseen reapportionment, voting rights, right to serve on jury, equal employment opportunity, school desegregation. And, I don't know of anyone that foresaw it.
Do you think there's been a genuine transformation of society in Alabama?
A what?
A genuine transformation.
So, yeah, in terms of people's attitudes on race.
Don't think there's any question about it.
Think it's impossible to go back to what it was 20 years ago?
Absolutely.
10 years ago?
Yeah. Sure do.
You think it's a basic attitude change?
Yes. I think that's an area in which we've made more progress than they've made in the northern states. People in the South, people in this state are basically law-abiding people. They love their country, love their flag. They're patriotic. They answer the call when it's necessary, and always have. And I think they'll continue to do it. And they have accepted decisions that some people thought that they would never accept. They've tolerated social changes and accepted them some people thought that they would never accept. They've done it in the main with good grace and without rancor. There are exceptions to that, and newspapers always play those up, which is news. I'm not critical of it, but they do. But by and large, there's been an acceptance of the social change that these decisions have brought about that I would have never thought possible.
One of the arguments made roughly a decade ago during the congressional debates about civil rights acts and so forth, for the laws cannot change the hearts and minds of men. Based on experience of the last 10 years, how do you react now to that contention?
Well, I don't mean to quibble, but I doubt if the laws have done it. The laws have prompted it being done. But when you change the hearts and minds of someone, they have to do that.
My question is, did they do that because the law changed, forcing change circumstances?
They did that because they were confronted with a situation that was required them to either comply or not to comply.
Right, but
you have whites and blacks eating in restaurants together. I ate in a restaurant yesterday. They're not doing that now because of the law, because the law don't require that they sit at the same table. The law don't require that they carry on an animated conversation during their lunch.
You're saying then they complied because the law required them to comply, but after complying, that they did actually change in attitude.
I think that's a fair statement. I think so.
But when you look back at just about every one of those controversial decisions you made, all the political leaders, the leaders in Alabama, said the people would never accept that.
Oh, they called for my impeachment. They says he's guilty of judicial tantrum.
How do you feel about that?
People have accepted it. Well, I think they underestimated the character and integrity of the people.
What sort of change have you found, say, compared with 10 years ago to now, insofar as the way people react to you? Not personal friends so much, just the general public who...
Well, you have to keep this in mind. When I came to Montgomery, I came from a place from Birmingham. I hadn't lived here. My mother and father lived here. I had a brother and sister that lived here. We had a lot of friends here. But I wasn't involved in social mainstream. But I wasn't involved in it up there either, because I don't like social mainstreams. I just don't like formal affairs. I didn't want to practice law. It's just something that I'm not interested in. But when I came here, I made a lot of friends. We all made a lot of friends. I guess that there was a reluctance on the part of some, evidenced in different picayune-ish ways, to demonstrate or exhibit friendship. All of that's gone now, practically all of it. People stop me on the street, I get mail, I get telephone calls. We're invited to places as if I had grown up on a plantation in Macon County, Alabama. So practically all of it's gone.
What do you think that means for the future of Alabama and the South?
Is that significant? I don't know. That's just been our personal experience. I don't... see any significance to it other than general attitude. I think the future of Alabama and the future of the South is unlimited as far as the country's concerned. I firmly believe that the South is the backbone of the country, and that the people in the South, with the integrity that they have and with the love of their country that they have as the mainstay of the government.
Do you detect any regional differences, say, between federal judges in the South as compared with judges in other regions?
I think judges in other regions are unaware of the changes that have taken place in the South. I think they're unaware of the acceptance of the cases that necessarily upset existing social standards and conditions. I don't think they have any conception of what's happened out here in the last 20 years. They don't have no conception of it. They don't have any appreciation. And there are some exceptions to that, but I was in New York last week sitting on the Temporary Emergency Court of Appeals with Judge Hasty, Chief Judge of the Third Circuit, who's black, Judge Anderson from Connecticut, Court of Appeals from the Second Circuit. Both of them are great judges, but they don't have any idea that the type of litigation that the federal judges in the South have been confronted with. Last 15, 16, 17 years.
Are there any other differences?
No, I think if either of those, just to use those as an example, I think had they been here, had they been faced with the same type of lawsuits, I would have decided them exactly like I've decided. Frank Johnson was just in a place at a time that these cases were filed. And I think most of you judges would have decided them the same way. There's some exceptions to that. Y'all were aware of those as well as I am.
No regrets?
Do I? None whatsoever.
Do it all the
same? I'm proud of my record. Extremely proud of it. None whatsoever. I would have probably thought about coming more if I'd known how hard I was going to have to work. I didn't have a proper conception of and couldn't foresee and didn't foresee the vast amount of litigation that has been brought in the federal courts in the last 15 or 16 years. I've worked harder than I wanted to work and longer without any recesses, vacations, and things like that. That would have been my only thought. I would have had any second thoughts.
You won't talk about Wallace?
No.
Did you agree with that piece in the paper this morning?
Not all of it. The one that Shannon wrote? No. I don't know. I would study a long time before I called someone an irresponsible demagogue. And I don't know whether George Wallace has changed or not. Maybe he has. I don't know that anyone except George Wallace would know that. Maybe and some people are of thought that he's just reverting to and demonstrating what he's always felt and what he's always thought, and the other was for political expediency, but I don't know that. I wouldn't think Shannon knew it either. My initial reaction that it was a very unfair article, unless he had a lot more facts than he wrote.
Do you have any comment on the development of the Republican Party in Alabama and the South in the last 20 years?
Well, all of my family were Republicans. They were the J. Jacksonian type Republicans. You've heard of Jacksonian Democrats, but Andrew Jackson came down in Northwest Alabama. A lot of his folks settled up there in Northwest Alabama, and we had a political philosophy that, or they did, that I grew up with and adopted. That is different from the political philosophy of the Republican Party now. Since Goldwater. Maybe sometime prior to that. It's my idea that as long as we have a reactionary type political philosophy that permeates and controls Republican organization, its future is not too bright.
You think the Republican Party missed the boat in not becoming an effective progressive party in the South?
I don't know. Up until now, and maybe not now, whether the time is ripe for an effective progressive political party in the South. I just don't know how well it would do. You're getting into an area that I don't know a thing about. I divorced myself completely from politics. The only politics I hear now are in the courtroom.